Thank you for being a valued supporter of the 10X Podcast Group. Your dedication means the world to us. Today we bring you a gripping tale titled, Nightfall on Elm Street. Your continued support and subscription fuel our passion for storytelling, and we deeply appreciate every moment you spend with us. So without further ado, let's dive into today's compelling narrative. Chapter 1. Shadows in the Suburbs. The golden glow of the streetlights cast long wavering shadows over Elm Street, a quaint suburban neighborhood where every house had a neatly trimmed lawn and every driveway gleamed with the sheen of prosperity. It was the kind of place where the neighbors exchanged polite nods over hedges, and the biggest scandal of the year was someone's garbage been left out too long after pickup. That was until the night Richard Halston was found dead. It was a Tuesday evening when Officer Clara Morrison arrived on the scene, the faint hum of cicadas blending with the soft chatter of neighbors who had gathered beyond the yellow crime scene tape. Richard's body lay sprawled on the ground behind his house, his white polo shirt stained crimson in the soft light of his patio's security lamp. A baseball bat, slick with blood, rested ominously near his outstretched hand. "Time of death?" Clara asked, adjusting her flashlight as she knelt beside the body. The medical examiner, Dr. Lucas Pratt, glanced up from his preliminary examination. "Rough estimate? Between 8:30 and 9 p.m. blunt force trauma to the head. Single blow." He pointed to the bat. "Likely the murder weapon." Clara's stomach tightened. She'd known Richard Halston, not well but enough to understand that he was a polarizing figure in the neighborhood. As the self-appointed leader of the Elm Street Neighborhood Watch, he was both revered and resented. To some, he was a hero who kept their idyllic community safe. To others, he was an overbearing nuisance who took his role far too seriously. The Halston house stood in stark contrast to the scene outside. Pristine and orderly, every piece of furniture looked as though it had been arranged by a magazine editor. Yet something about the atmosphere felt off, like a stage set perfect but devoid of life. Clara's gaze fell on the rows of monitors in Richard's study, each screen flickering with grainy footage of different angles around the neighborhood. "Creepy, isn't it?" Detective Ethan Harper muttered as he stepped into the room. His sharp blue eyes scanned the screens. Half the block didn't even know he was recording them. Clara nodded. "You think someone found out and decided to put an end to it?" Ethan shrugged. "Maybe. But we'd better tread carefully. People love to hate this guy, but not enough to murder him. I think. The neighbors speak." By morning, Elm Street was buzzing with speculation. The local cafe Brew and Bloom became a makeshift headquarters for gossip. "I told you he was a troublemaker." Gloria Hill, a retired teacher with a penchant for drama, exclaimed to her friend Marjorie. "Always peeking into everyone's business. It's no wonder someone snapped." Across the cafe, younger residents like Jack and Emily, a married couple new to the neighborhood, shared worried glances. "Do you think it's safe here anymore?" Emily whispered. "First the missing teens and now this." "The teens went missing years ago," Jack replied, though his voice wavered with doubt. "This has to be something else." But the connection was hard to ignore. Over the past decade, 4 teenagers had vanished from Elm Street. None of them were connected, at least not at first glance. The cases had gone cold, leaving the families shattered and the neighborhood forever marred by whispers of tragedy. Clues in the shadows. That afternoon, Clara returned to the crime scene with Ethan to comb through Richard's house. The study revealed more than just surveillance footage. In a locked drawer, they found a stack of manila folders, each labeled with a name: Tyler Crow, Melissa Vaughn, Jake Stanton, and Heather Lyle, the names of the missing teens. "What the hell is this?" Ethan muttered, flipping through the contents. Each folder contained detailed notes, photographs, and printouts of text conversations. "He was tracking them," Clara said, her voice tight. "Why? And why keep it secret?" The most chilling discovery, however, was a single post-it note tucked into Tyler Crow's folder. Written in Richard's scrawled handwriting were the words, "They always come back at night. Community on edge." The news of the folders spread like wildfire. By evening, the entire neighborhood buzzed with unease. Residents speculated about Richard's involvement with the missing teens, with theories ranging from him being their secret protector to their cold-blooded abductor. In the coming days, Clara and Ethan would uncover darker secrets lurking beneath Elm Street's polished exterior. But for now, one thing was clear: Richard Halston's death was not the end of a story. It was the beginning of an unraveling that would shatter the community's carefully constructed facade. And in the stillness of the night, as the streetlights flickered, it seemed as though Elm Street itself held its breath, waiting for the truth to emerge from the shadows. Chapter 2: The Watcher's Secrets. The police department on Elm Street was a modest building, bustling but rarely overwhelmed. That changed after Richard Halston's murder. Detectives Clara Morrison and Ethan Harper found themselves inundated with calls, tips, and neighborhood gossip, all of which pointed in different directions. Yet, none were as unsettling as the clues they had uncovered in Richard's study. The folders on the missing teens sat in the evidence room, an ominous reminder of the case's complexity. Clara stood over the table, flipping through the folder labeled Melissa Vaughn. Photographs of Melissa at the local park, walking to school and sitting on her front porch, stared back at her, all taken from a distance. "This isn't just creepy," Clara said to Ethan, who leaned against the doorway. "It's invasive. He wasn't just watching people, he was studying them." Ethan stepped forward, glancing at the open folder. "It's almost obsessive. Do we know why he focused on these four?" "Not yet." Clara pointed to the post-it note with the words, "They always come back at night." "But this, it feels like a lead, even if I don't know what it means yet. The footage." Later that day, the team began combing through Richard's surveillance footage. It was an exhaustive task, with hundreds of hours of grainy recordings stored on hard drives. The cameras captured every corner of Elm Street: the pristine driveways, the manicured lawns, the neighbors going about their day-to-day lives. "Is this even legal?" Ethan asked, shaking his head as he scanned the footage. "How did no one complain about this?" "Because no one knew," Clara replied. "And those who did probably didn't care until now." Hours into their review, something caught Clara's attention. On a tape from 3 nights before Richard's death, a figure moved through the shadows near Richard's backyard. The person wore a hooded sweatshirt, the face obscured, but their movements were deliberate, calculated. "Pause it," Clara said, leaning closer to the screen. She pointed at the figure, who seemed to glance directly at one of Richard's cameras before disappearing into the night. "Who is that?" Ethan rewound the tape, freezing the frame where the figure's face should have been visible. But the hood and shadows made identification impossible. "Whoever it is, they're no amateur," Ethan muttered. "They knew exactly where the cameras were. A hidden room." The investigation took another chilling turn when officers searched Richard's house a second time. Behind a locked door in the basement, they discovered a hidden room, a stark, windowless space outfitted with more surveillance monitors. On the desk sat a dusty tape recorder and a collection of old VHS tapes labeled with dates stretching back years. Clara and Ethan stood in silence, taking in the room's unsettling atmosphere. "What the hell was he doing down here?" Ethan asked, his voice low. Clara picked up one of the tapes and read the date: June 14, 2015. The date matched the disappearance of Jake Stanton, one of the missing teens. "We need to watch these," Clara said, her stomach churning. Back at the station, the team set up a VHS player and began reviewing the tapes. The first few were mundane, showing Richard going about his daily routine. But then came the tape marked June 14, 2015. The footage showed Jake Stanton walking down Elm Street late at night. Richard's camera followed the boy as he paused near the Halston house, glancing over his shoulder as if sensing he was being watched. Moments later, Jake disappeared from view, leaving the camera's frame. "That's it?" Ethan asked, frowning. "There's nothing else?" Clara rewound the tape, watching it again and again, hoping to catch something they had missed. But the footage ended the same way every time, with Jake vanishing into the shadows. The community turns. News of the investigation leaked, and Elm Street's residents were quick to cast judgment. Theories about Richard's involvement in the teens' disappearances dominated local conversations. "He must have had something to do with it," Gloria Hill declared at the neighborhood association meeting. "Why else would he have those folders?" "But what if he was trying to help?" countered Jack, the young father who had recently moved in. "Maybe he found something the police missed and didn't know how to handle it. Or maybe he was covering his tracks," Emily whispered, her voice trembling. "What if he wasn't just watching them? What if he was luring them?" The debate grew heated, dividing the neighborhood into factions. Some defended Richard as a misunderstood protector. Others painted him as a predator who had finally met his end. The mysterious caller. That evening, as Clara sat in her office, her phone rang. The number was unlisted. "Detective Morrison," she answered. A distorted voice crackled through the line. You're looking in the wrong places. Clara's pulse quickened. Who is this? You think Richard was the monster, the voice continued, ignoring her question. But he wasn't. He was trying to stop it. Stop what? Clara demanded, gripping the phone tighter. The line went dead. Clara sat frozen, her mind racing. The call raised more questions than it answered. Who had killed Richard Halston? And what dark truth was lurking beneath the surface of Elm Street? Closing shadows. As night fell over Elm Street, the shadows seemed to deepen, swallowing the familiar streets in an unsettling darkness. The neighborhood had always prided itself on its safety, its sense of community. But now that sense was unraveling, replaced by paranoia and fear. And somewhere in the depths of the mystery, someone was watching. Waiting. The secrets of Elm Street were far from over. Chapter 3. Echoes of the Missing. The morning fog clung to Elm Street like a heavy curtain, shrouding the quiet houses in a murky stillness. It had been days since the murder of Richard Halston, and the air of the neighborhood felt palpably different. Thicker, darker. Detective Clara Morrison's desk was cluttered with files, photographs, and stacks of Richard's tapes, each more unnerving than the last. She had spent the night poring over surveillance footage and the folders he had meticulously compiled on the missing teens. The evidence pointed in multiple directions, yet every lead seemed to circle back to one burning question. Why did Richard care so much about these kids? Her thoughts were interrupted by the arrival of Ethan Harper, who carried a fresh cup of coffee and an expression of unease. You're going to want to see this, he said, placing a report on her desk. Clara skimmed the document. It was a forensic analysis of the blood found on the baseball bat, the confirmed murder weapon. Her brow furrowed as she read the final line. It's not just Richard's blood, Ethan said. There's a second DNA sample on the bat. And it matches one of the missing teens, Jake Stanton. Reopening old wounds. The revelation sent shockwaves through the investigation. Jake Stanton had vanished 9 years earlier, a bright and athletic 17-year-old with a promising future ahead of him. His disappearance had devastated his family and left the community grappling for answers. Clara and Ethan immediately visited Jake's mother, Ellen Stanton, a reserved woman who had spent the last decade battling grief and relentless whispers. I don't understand, Ellen said, her hands trembling as she clutched a photograph of Jake. Why would his DNA be on that bat? Does this mean he's alive? Clara hesitated, choosing her words carefully. We don't know yet. But it suggests there was some kind of contact between Jake and Richard. Did Richard ever speak to you about your son? Ellen's eyes narrowed. Richard? No. He wasn't close to our family. But, she paused, her face tightening. He used to watch Jake. I remember Jake complaining about how Richard always seemed to show up wherever he was, at the park, outside school, even on our street. I thought it was harmless at the time. Ethan leaned forward. Did Jake ever say why Richard was following him? Ellen shook her head. No. But no. I wonder if he knew something about Jake's disappearance. Something he wasn't telling us. Patterns in the darkness. Back at the station, Clara and Ethan mapped out the timeline of the missing teens. Tyler Crow, Melissa Vaughn, Jake Stanton, and Heather Lyle had vanished over a span of 7 years, with no apparent connection between them. But the new evidence suggested otherwise. Jake's DNA on the bat ties him to Richard, Ethan said, pacing the room. And Richard's folders show he was obsessed with all four of these kids. What if he wasn't just watching them? What if he was tracking something they were involved in? Clara studied the photos pinned to the board. Each teen's image stared back at her, their expressions frozen in time. Her eyes lingered on Tyler Crow, the first to disappear. Look at their ages when they vanished, Clara said, pointing to the timeline. Tyler was 16, Melissa was 15, Jake was 17, and Heather was 16. They were all teenagers. What if that's the connection? Ethan nodded slowly. It's possible. But why target them? And who's the real predator here, Richard or someone else? Unearthed connections. Later that evening, Clara visited the Elm Street Library, combing through archives and news clippings about the missing teens. Among the articles, one caught her attention. A report about a mysterious fire at an abandoned factory on the outskirts of town. The fire had occurred a month after Tyler Crow's disappearance, and several witnesses claimed to have seen teenagers in the area before the blaze. Intrigued, Clara drove to the factory the next morning. The building was a crumbling relic of the town's industrial past, its charred walls covered in graffiti. As she stepped inside, the smell of damp and decay filled the air. The ground was littered with debris, but something shiny caught her eye near a broken window. Bending down, she picked up a bracelet, a simple chain with a small heart-shaped charm. It was tarnished but intact. "Melissa Vaughn," Clara whispered, recognizing the bracelet from a photograph in her folder. A ghost from the past. That night, Clara sat in her dimly lit office, staring at the bracelet on her desk. The discovery at the factory only deepened the mystery. What had Melissa been doing there? And why had Richard kept his investigation into the teens a secret? Her thoughts were interrupted by another anonymous call. "Detective Morrison," she answered cautiously. "You found the bracelet," the distorted voice said. Clara's heart raced. "Who is this? How do you know about Melissa?" The voice chuckled darkly. "You think you're solving the puzzle, but you're not even close. Richard wasn't the villain. He was hunting the real monster." "What monster?" Clara demanded, gripping the phone tightly. There was a pause before the voice replied, chilling in its simplicity. "The one that lives on Elm Street. The line went dead. Echoes that linger." As the clock struck midnight, Clara sat alone in the station, piecing together fragments of a story that refused to make sense. Somewhere in the shadows of Elm Street, the truth lay hidden, waiting to be uncovered. But with each step closer to the answers, the danger grew. And Clara couldn't shake the feeling that someone, or something, was watching her, just as Richard had watched the neighborhood for so many years. The echoes of the missing were growing louder. And soon they would demand to be heard. Chapter 4: Betrayal and Bloodshed. The factory was more than a ruin. It was a mausoleum of secrets. Clara Morrison couldn't shake the feeling that every corner of the charred building whispered something, something she couldn't yet comprehend. The discovery of Melissa Vaughn's bracelet had added urgency to the investigation, but it also deepened the unease coiling in her gut. "What do you think they were doing here?" Ethan Harper asked as he stepped over the shattered remnants of a rusted conveyor belt. "I don't know," Clara said, her voice low. "But this place isn't random. It's connected to them, the missing teens. And somehow it's connected to Richard Halston." Ethan picked up a half-burned notebook from a pile of debris, its edges brittle and blackened. He opened it carefully, revealing faint pencil sketches and fragmented notes. "They meet here. Always after dark. Something isn't right." The pages crackled in his hands. "This was Richard's," Ethan said. "He must have been following them here. But why?" Clara frowned, her mind racing. "Maybe he thought they were involved in something dangerous." She paused, staring at the words scrawled on the page. "Or maybe he knew they were in danger. The neighborhood's cracks." Back on Elm Street, the fabric of the community was unraveling. The discovery of Richard's files and his hidden surveillance room had stoked paranoia and mistrust among the residents. Accusations flew like arrows, each neighbor pointing fingers at another. "I saw him lurking near Richard's house the night of the murder," Gloria Hill proclaimed at a hastily called neighborhood meeting, her voice shrill and shaking. The man she pointed to, a wiry electrician named Carl Bishop, shot back angrily, "You're crazy, Gloria. You're just upset because Richard caught you stealing flowers from his garden." The room erupted into chaos, voices overlapping, neighbors turning on one another. Clara and Ethan stood at the back of the crowd, observing the growing tensions. "They're eating each other alive," Ethan muttered. Clara's gaze swept the room, her instincts tingling. Somewhere in the cacophony, someone knew more than they were saying. But finding the truth amid the noise would be like catching smoke, unveiling a hidden agenda. Later that evening, Clara and Ethan reviewed more of the VHS tapes found in Richard's hidden room. One tape, dated July 4, 2015, showed a group of teenagers sneaking into the abandoned factory. Among them were Tyler Crow, Melissa Vaughn, and Jake Stanton. "Look at their faces," Clara said, pausing the tape. The teens didn't appear frightened. If anything, they seemed exhilarated, their movements quick and purposeful. "They're carrying something," Ethan pointed out, leaning closer to the screen. Clara rewound the footage and froze it on a frame showing Tyler holding a duffel bag. The contents weren't visible, but the weight of the bag was evident in the way he carried it. "What's in the bag?" Ethan asked, voicing the question that lingered in both their minds. Clara's jaw tightened. "Whatever it is, Richard thought it was worth following them for. As they continued watching, the tape abruptly cut to static, leaving them with more questions than answers. A bloodied past. The next morning, Clara received a call from Dr. Lucas Pratt, the medical examiner. "I ran additional tests on Richard's injuries," he said, his tone grim. "The blow to the head wasn't the only trauma. There are older bruises on his torso and arms, weeks old, maybe months. Someone had been roughing him up long before his murder." Claire's stomach churned. "And the DNA from Jake Stanton? Any updates?" "Yes," Lucas replied. "The DNA isn't from sweat or skin cells. It's blood, trace amounts mixed with Richard's. Whatever happened between them, it was violent. A dark connection." The evidence led Clara and Ethan to question more residents, focusing on those who had ties to the missing teens. One name came up repeatedly: Frankie Lyle, Heather Lyle's older brother. Frankie was a troubled figure in the neighborhood, a loner with a reputation for delinquency. When Clara and Ethan knocked on his door, the disheveled man who answered had the telltale signs of someone haunted by ghosts. "I don't know anything about Richard or those damn kids," Frankie spat, glaring at the detectives. "But you knew Jake," Clara pressed, holding up a photograph of Jake Stanton and Heather Lyle together. "And Tyler. And Melissa." Frankie's eyes flickered with recognition before he turned away. "That was a long time ago. Long enough to forget what happened to them?" Ethan asked, his tone sharp. Frankie froze, his hand tightening on the edge of the door. "You think I don't remember?" he growled, his voice breaking. "I remember everything. But you're looking in the wrong place." "Then point us to the right one," Clara said firmly. Frankie's shoulders slumped, and he muttered under his breath, "You're not ready for what you'll find." A brutal warning. That night, Clara returned home, her mind heavy with the weight of the day's revelations. But as she approached her front door, she noticed something off. A faint scratch on the lock, a shadow that shouldn't have been there. Her hand instinctively went to her holstered weapon as she stepped inside, her eyes scanning every corner of the room. Everything appeared untouched, yet the air felt charged, as if someone had been there moments before. On her kitchen table, she found a single object. A photograph of Melissa Vaughn, her face circled in red. Scrawled across the bottom were three chilling words: "You're getting closer. Betrayal in the shadows." Clara called Ethan immediately, and within minutes he arrived with a team to sweep her house for evidence. "Whoever left this is playing games," Ethan said, his expression grim. "And they're watching us," Clara replied, her voice steely. "Just like Richard watched them." As the team packed up, Clara sat alone, staring at the photograph. The deeper she dug into the case, the clearer it became that the truths of Elm Street weren't just buried. They were actively being guarded. By whom and at what cost? The answers were closing in, but with every step forward, the threat grew more personal. And as the night swallowed Elm Street once again, Clara knew the bloodshed was far from over. Chapter 5. Nightfall's Reckoning. The night was heavy with silence on Elm Street. An unnatural stillness that felt like the neighborhood itself was holding its breath. The photograph of Melissa Vaughn remained on Clara's desk, its red-circled face a haunting reminder of how close, and how vulnerable, she had become. She glanced at her phone, its screen dark, and decided she couldn't wait any longer. Answers wouldn't come by sitting idle. Clara called Ethan. "Meet me at the factory," she said firmly. A descent into darkness. The abandoned factory loomed like a specter under the pale light of the moon. Its broken windows glinted with an eerie glow, and the graffiti-scarred walls seemed to shift in the shadows. Ethan arrived moments after Clara, his face grim but resolute. "You think whoever left that photograph is connected to this place?" he asked as they entered. "I don't think, I know," Clara replied, her flashlight cutting through the darkened corridors. They retraced their steps to the area where Clara had found Melissa's bracelet. As they searched, Ethan's foot caught on something metallic, a trapdoor hidden beneath a thin layer of debris. "Help me with this," he said, grunting as they pried it open. The trapdoor revealed a ladder leading into a narrow underground passageway. The air grew colder as they descended, the damp walls pressing in around them. "What is this place?" Ethan whispered, his voice echoing. Clara's flashlight swept across the walls, illuminating faded symbols and cryptic messages scrawled in chalk. At the end of the passage, they found a small room filled with discarded items. Backpacks, shoes, and clothing. "This is their stuff," Clara said, her stomach churning. She picked up a jacket that matched one Melissa Vaughn had been wearing in a photograph. Ethan scanned the room, his expression hardening. This isn't just a meeting spot. It's a graveyard for their lives. Vape speak. In the corner of the room sat a dusty tape recorder and a stack of labeled cassettes. Clara grabbed the first tape and played it. A static-filled voice crackled to life. They said it was a game. But it wasn't. It was a trap. The voice belonged to Tyler Crowe. His words were disjointed, frantic. The tape continued. We thought we could outsmart him. We were wrong. He's always watching. The recording ended abruptly, leaving Clara and Ethan in stunned silence. Outsmart who? Ethan asked, his voice low. Before Clara could answer, another sound broke the silence. A metallic clang from above. Someone was in the factory. A deadly confrontation. Clara motioned for Ethan to follow as they climbed back up the ladder. They moved quietly through the factory, their flashlights off to avoid detection. The faint sound of footsteps echoed through the building, deliberate and heavy. Clara's heart pounded as she gripped her weapon, her eyes scanning the shadows. Near the main entrance, they spotted a figure. A tall man dressed in dark clothing, his face obscured by a hood. He held a crowbar, his posture tense and predatory. Police! Drop your weapon! Clara shouted, her voice cutting through the silence. The man turned and bolted, disappearing into the labyrinth of the factory. Clara and Ethan pursued him, their footsteps echoing in the vast, empty space. Split up! Ethan called, veering left while Clara continued straight. The chase was a blur of adrenaline and darkness. Clara's flashlight flickered as she rounded a corner, her breath sharp in her chest. Suddenly, the man lunged from the shadows, swinging the crowbar. Clara dodged, the weapon narrowly missing her head. She stumbled but recovered quickly, aiming her gun. Stop. Don't make me shoot. The man froze, his hood falling back to reveal his face. Clara's stomach twisted in recognition. Frankie Lyle, she breathed. The monster revealed. Frankie's eyes were wild, his face gaunt. You don't understand, he said, his voice breaking. I had to do it. I had to stop him. Stop who? Clara demanded, keeping her gun trained on him. The man who took them, Frankie said, his words spilling out in a rush. He's still out there. Richard was trying to find him, but he got too close. That's why he's dead. Ethan arrived, his gun drawn. What are you talking about? Who killed Richard? Frankie's hands trembled as he dropped the crowbar. It wasn't me. It was him. Before Clara could press further, a deafening crack echoed through the factory. Frankie's body jerked violently, blood blooming across his chest. He collapsed, lifeless, as a shadowy figure disappeared into the darkness. The final clue. The factory fell silent except for Clara's ragged breathing. She knelt beside Frankie, her hands shaking as she checked for a pulse. He's gone, she said quietly, anger and frustration boiling beneath the surface. Ethan scanned the area, but the shooter was long gone. They're cleaning up loose ends, he muttered. Whoever this is, they're not done. Clara's gaze fell on Frankie's hand, which clutched a crumpled piece of paper. She pried it loose and unfolded it. The note contained a single address and two words. Find him. Nightfall's reckoning. As dawn broke over Elm Street, the neighborhood stirred awake, unaware of the horrors that had unfolded in the night. Clara and Ethan sat in their car, staring at the address written on the note. This isn't over, Clara said, her voice steady despite the weight of the moment. No, Ethan agreed. But we're closer than we've ever been. With the sun rising behind them, they started the engine and drove toward the truth, knowing that whatever lay ahead would change everything. And somewhere in the shadows, the real monster watched, waiting for their next move.